So when you think about sales, what is the first thing that comes to mind? Is it money, product, services, or the idea of the pushy car salesman? Well, I can guarantee you the last thing that comes to mind is design, which is why I'm super excited about today's episode, because my guest today has worked with The Economist, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Yahoo, helping them use design to win a whole lot of new business. Now, hold on to the idea of design for a second. When you think about design, what else comes to mind? What you will hear in this conversation would totally shock you. In this conversation, we talk about the three ways you can outsmart your competition using design thinking. We also talk about how you can improve your service or your product using customer interviews and how you can actually do that. And we talk about the six steps you can use to identify your ideal customer. So without wasting any more time, let's get right to it.
Welcome to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast, where we ask today's most successful experts and entrepreneurs to share the most powerful lead generation and appointment setting tactics they use to build their business and grow their revenues. Now your host from the city that never sleeps, New York, is Kwesi Sachijinai.
Hey everyone, it's Kwesi Sachijinai. My guest today is Danny. Danny has spent the past 15 years of his life helping companies use design to increase the capacities they have to deliver more results to their businesses and grow their sales. And he's worked with mature companies like The Economist, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Yahoo, as well as a whole lot of different startups and VC funds. He's currently running his own product and UX agency called Co-Create, and he's also coaching at Startup Ventures Acceleration Program here in New York City. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Let's get to it. Awesome. Danny, thanks so much for joining the conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I was chatting with you before we hit record, and it's been over a year, I think, and it's always refreshing to hear your perspectives on design and user experience and sales. And so I want us to delve into that a little bit more in this conversation. But before we do that, you know, I have a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners in this community, people listening to this podcast, and they might be, you know, saying or asking, all I want is sales. What has design got to do with it, right? So I want us to lay the foundation for this conversation. How important is design as far as sales is concerned?
So at the core of design is purpose, right? That's the difference between design and art. When we talk about design, a lot of times we think about graphic design or like Apple product because it's so beautiful, like a sculpture, right? The purpose has to do with solving a human problem. And in order for a sales deal to happen, you need to solve the other party's problem. So the two are very much connected in that way. So sales would get the deal, the agreement to work together, and then the design is actually delivering on that promise of solving the problem.
Fascinating. So it's really interesting you mentioned purpose, because as far as design goes, it can mean a lot of things to different people, just like purpose. Like people have, you know, different goals or purposes for their own business. For some, design could mean the visual appeal of, say, the website or the newsletter or the software they have. So for you, you've seen a lot of different scenarios. When you think about design, what are the first few concepts that come to mind, or even ideas?
So a lot of times, the first thing that comes to mind is that do people, the other person, people in general, have the same understanding of design and why they need the design, right? So for example, I'm sure you and a lot of your audience here have experienced beautifully designed app. It's so beautiful, but you use it once and then you delete it. You uninstall it. Mm-hmm. What happened there? The design is great, right? Well, is it really? Or the other side of that is something like Craigslist. It's so ugly. For bare bone,
or we people still use it.
People use it over and over. They keep coming back to it. So why? because those ugly things still serve a purpose and they solve the real problem. While the beautifully designed apps or websites, they don't do that as well, or they don't do that period. They're stuck with the visual, the paint job. I like to use dating as a way to bring this thing home. It's like you're meeting somebody like gorgeous, amazing, but you can't connect with this person. And this person, it just doesn't care about you, but she or he cares about talking about themselves. Is there going to be a second date? Probably not. Unless you're going after something that is very superficial, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So you're saying that, you know, the purpose aside, the design itself could be visually appealing or not appealing, but it could still achieve the purpose that you have for it. Did I get you correctly?
Yes. So the visual, essentially the visual side of it, it's just one of the elements of design.
Gotcha.
So a lot of people are mistaken that way, as the entirety of the design is the visual, but it's actually just one of the layers of design.
Mm. So as an entrepreneur or business owner, you know, thinking about design, what are the additional concepts that they should think about on top of the visual appeal?
I keep going back to design thinking for this, and it's a buzzword, of course, but at the core of design thinking is understanding the problem first, the core problem of the human, right? So design thinking goes like this. You start with empathizing with your audience, and then you define the problem for them. And then you try to come up with a lot of ideas quickly, and then you converge into one winning idea and prototype it and test with them again. So sometimes people call this user-centered design or human-centered design. What that means is that there's a human at the center of the process. So we keep going back to, does this solve the problem, right? And after we know the solution solves the problem, then we make the experience better. And the visual layer is part of that. Now, when we go to the side of like marketing and sales, where we use things like landing pages or like email, right? Email newsletter or email marketing kind of thing, templates. Design, visual design, I'm talking about here, is becoming more important because the purpose of, let's say, a landing page is to convert user, to get them to do certain action, right? That's what we want. And for that reason, if the first impression is bad, like, for example, the website looks like a scam, even if the product is legit, if the website looks like a scam, the user is not going to continue. But as you can see that the purpose drives the decision of like making the visual design more important or not.
Mm. This is so good. And I want us to unpack it for just a little bit more. I want us to move from the sort of the theory of design to the everyday hustle and execution, right? So for someone in a service business or a software business, what are, you know, you talk about empathy and you talk about finding the problem and designing the concept and prototyping, but what are some of the practical ways that they can use these concepts to improve the products or services that they have right now and actually create products that would sell?
So the first thing to do is quickly, this is the thinking from Lean Startup, just test it first. Identify what is the problem and try to understand what your user or your target audience is thinking. So think from their perspective. A lot of times we get to focus on what we want to sell and don't spend enough time on what people are looking to buy. So understanding the other side, and this is like sales is very, in sales, this is very important, right? Sales, negotiation, all these things, it's the same principle apply there. We need to think from the perspective of our customer, our users, because ultimately what we're building serves their needs. Otherwise, we cannot actually monetize, we cannot extract the value out of it. So test first, test two things to evaluate. Is it effective? In other words, does it actually solve their problem? Number two, in relationship to that, related to that, is that if it does solve their problem, is it efficient? Is it efficient enough?
How do you mean by efficient?
So if you are trying to get a car service, right? So I'm using Uber as an example. You're trying to create an Uber killer. Mm-hmm. Your product is way more effective than Uber for some reason. Yeah, it's faster and it's giving you better rate and all that. But in order to book a car requires three times the time than Uber. Will users actually switch from from Uber to your product? Probably not. Because then you cannot convince them, like, yeah, it does work, but then to just get them to try it, a lot of them are going to just bail because it's just too much work.
Gotcha. Did you have two things you mentioned is the first, you got to identify the problem and you got to think of how efficient it's going to be. Was there additional tactics or techniques that you want to share with us?
A good way to test that is to also test your competitors. Have your user test your competitors and observe how they use your competitors. And then talk to them, find out what they like about the solution that they currently use right now, whether it's yours or your competitors.
Right. So if I understand correctly, are you saying that you should ask your users, your customers to go test competition, the product? Mm-hmm. Isn't there any risk of losing them?
Well, you're probably already losing them if that's the fear.
Mm.
Right? You're probably already losing them without realizing it. Now you know why you're losing the customers to your competitors.
Right. And so this is really fascinating. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned was landing pages and sales pages that, you know, the goal of the sales page is to convert. And I want us to sort of borrow the three ideas that you talked about. And, you know, when we apply that to web design, what are some of the most common mistakes or deal breakers you've seen B2B companies make?
The biggest one would be, I'll build it. It's an awesome product. They'll come and it's going to be awesome. That's it. Right? They think we are, you know, our technology is superior. Therefore, our customers will definitely switch to us and we're going to own this market. That's not the case in most cases because they don't communicate it effectively through these landing pages or their other marketing materials. Switching, the cost of switching a lot of times is the barrier because it's just, especially for B2B, because a lot of times the customer, meaning the person who actually pays for it, are not the same as the end users who use it on day in and day out. Right? Because of that, then the end users normally don't have a say. If it's like, oh, I'm not going to use this, then they can just switch easily. So therefore, your landing page needs to also to speak to the customer, not the end user, and make them realize the value that you're bringing to the table and also help them understand that the hassle of getting the budget approved or like making the switch, because that normally B2B requires some kind of integration, changing of the workflow, the processes, that kind of thing. So it keeps going back to that, like convincing them that this is actually worthwhile and it's going to actually benefit you. It's going to make you look good in front of your boss.
Right. I think it's a really important point about messaging to address different users on the sort of the customer side. I think that's one thing that at least from my side, I've seen a lot of people kind of miss out in the sales pages and landing pages as well.
Yeah, because they don't understand the decision-making process on the other side. that's a lot of them. I see that a lot. And they just want to talk about what they want to talk about. For example, I was helping somebody recently who wanted to include a video about himself talking about the product, like above the benefits of what his product is offering. Because he's so proud of the origin story. He believes that he's got a very charming personality. So he convinced a lot of people that this idea is great, got investment and something. But looking at it from the other end, why would the user click on that video at all? And this video is about him. Right? Like they come to the landing page to get a problem solved. Him talking about himself is not going to solve any problem.
It's interesting you bring this up, because there's this whole notion of people buying into stories. And I guess trying to play the devil's advocate here, that was probably how the founder was thinking about it. If he tells his story, people might buy into it. But from a broader, design that helps you sell your products point of view, where do you see stories? How important are stories, and how should you use it to address the needs that you have?
Okay. So stories play two important roles. They do help with the conversion. Mm-hmm. In the example that I mentioned earlier, the founder's story could help add credibility that he's passionate about the project and he's not just trying to make quick bucks. Right? But in order for that to actually work, you need to convince the user first that this company understands the problem and they have the solution for the problem, and then as a supporting material to convince to get the user to that, I guess, to make that decision, to make the leap, the team and the origin story could help. Okay, so another kind of video that normally could work in conversion, helping with conversion, is the video of, it's kind of like a testimonial video where like somebody talk about, okay, I had this problem, right? You see this with like all the pharmaceutical, I got this problem and then this is what's going on. And after I do this, I tried this and this and this, it didn't work. And then I tried this new solution and worked. Now look at my life, it's great. What that does is that it allows the audience, hopefully we get the right persona who actually have that problem, to say, oh yeah, me too. I have that problem. Oh yeah, they understand my problem and I want that solution. That's how that works. So the use case convinces the user that this company understands their problem so well and has the solution for it. Mm. Very different from the original story, because this is centered around the user, again, the customer, not around the founder.
Right. This is so good. User story and the origin story. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So for someone who is just like very non-techy, all they care about is sales, the bottom line. I know you showed a couple of different tactics. And the first one is getting to identify the problem. What are some of the tools or benchmarks or I don't know if you have any processes you use to identify user problems? Can you share them?
Sure. I got one of the framework that I like to use is this creating a persona, proto persona actually. So just create a sketch of your persona. What that persona is simply just, for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's simply a fictional character that represents your target audience. It's essentially what you're doing there is your profiling, right? And with this, the 5W and 1H could help. What that is that you ask, who is this person? You describe the demographic. This person is male, 24 to 30, living in New York, making this much money, doing this job, that kind of thing, the demographic, which the kind of thing that you normally use in Facebook marketing or in Google advertising, right? And who, and then the why. What should they care about what you're trying to build? How is it hurting them? The consequences. So that's the why. And then right now, when and where would that problem arise? How often? Is it at work, at home, on the street, how often, every day, every week, every month, and then the what and how. What do they do about it? What solutions do they use? And how do they solve this problem now? And if you can get to the pricing question, that will be helpful too. How much do they pay for the solution now to solve this problem? That could help you identify with that this is a good market to attack or not. So that's the main thing that I normally use. And then as you talk to people, you refine this. So you talk to people by, you can do like recruiting on Craigslist, on LinkedIn, or whatever, and using your friends. Survey them so that you can qualify them, but ask the right people to talk to based on your persona. And then you talk to them. When you talk to them, this is what the fancy term is, customer interviews. You talk to them to identify what, to validate essentially, whether your assumption that you put on that paper, on the persona, whether that's valid or not. Right? So you talk to them, and the goal of this is first to identify, to validate that, like, the problem and the persona are correct.
Gotcha.
So when you talk to them, you don't ask about what do you normally do, not the normal behavior or the aspirational, what do you think you will do? No. But you go back to the last instance of when they had that problem.
This is,
when was the last time you tried that car?
Yeah, this is really good. I mean, if you can see me, I have a big smile on my face, and because it's been, you know, when I talk to, we talk a lot about identifying the right persona, and I think that the five W's and the one H, it brings so much clarity into how people can think about it. Who is a person? Why, when, where, what, and how much I can pay. I want us to end on this high note. So where can people learn more about your work and connect with you?
So the best way is, I guess, connect with me on LinkedIn. I wrote some articles there. Just look me up, Danny Setiawan. I have a bare bone website, cocreate.consulting. But LinkedIn is probably the best way. And also, if you want to ask questions, you can find me on Quora. I'm pretty active there. So those are the 3 ways.
Awesome, Danny. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Vincy.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast with Kwesi Sachi-Jinai. Find out more about how to get high-value appointments at catalyze.io. And while you're there, check out the free resources for appointment setting. And be listening for the next episode of the Art of Appointment Setting podcast.